Come on in, Alfred.
Come on, Alfred.
So you sit there.
Oh, you get the cushion.
Do you want the cushion?
No,
I don't think I want the cushion.
I don't want it. Rude.
Well, I didn't ask for a cushion.
Now, but there's a nice furry carpet. You can sit down here. Come on. Do you want to sit on my jumper? He prefers to sit on my jumper.
Does he? I mean, I understand that. Look at this. I've got notes about you.
Have you?
I might know stuff you didn't know I knew. I might know stuff that isn't true.
I'm sure that would be the case. Do we wear headphones?
You can wear headphones,
Let's
yeah.
Do it.
It's quite. I like it when you wear headphones because you sound better.
It's lovely to see you.
And you.
What made you decide to do this?
I don't know, midlife crisis? I'm not sure.
I'm honoured.
How can I do this without you? Oh. Do we sound okay? Yeah? Can you speak?
Yes.
Alfred, speak!
Alfred.
Oh, woof. Oh, woof.
He can't. He won't. Unless someone knocks on the door. If you knock on the door, he'll bark. Don't do that.
Let's do that. Should we do that later?
Yeah, later.
Yeah. Let's not scare
him. It can be our alarm at the end.
Scare the poor thing.
Don't get up yet, Alf. I want to get a sweetener from my bag.
Oh, yeah. It's right there. You've already got them.
Oh, look at that. So organised.
It was a little old lady moment.
Oh, God, they happen quite a lot now.
Do they?
Yeah. Mm. Do you get them, old lady?
I like that you're using a biro to stir your tea.
Well, it's not a spoon, is it?
I don't think the Queen does that, love.
I bet she does.
David Tennant does a podcast with
Olivia Colman.
Hello, Olivia.
Hi, David.
Thanks for being here today.
Oh, my God, it's such a pleasure.
With your dog, Alfred, on your lap.
Alfred Lord Waggison.
Lovely to see him. He's very quiet.
He's very quiet. He's whispering. He says it's nice to see you.
I don't think anyone's going to believe he's here unless he makes some noise. He's very
well
behaved.
Can do a doggy bagpipe.
It just looks like you're doing the Heimlich manoeuvre on your dog.
Sometimes it goes...
So, Collie, as we call you, listeners... It's quite difficult, and I've been trying to find anyone to say anything nasty about you. You're very loved, aren't you? It's true, though. You seem very well adjusted, very unpretentious, very normal, which is not.
It's very like you, though, DT.
No, you're a much nicer person than I am.
I similarly have never met anyone who said, "Oh, what a cunt."
Oh, I'll give you a couple of names.
Have you? I mean, I'd love to meet them.
But you do. That's not the normal way for actors. Do you feel more well adjusted?
I don't know any arseholes, though, do you?
No, I don't mean arseholes. I mean, you have a sort of groundedness to you and a normality to you, which a lot of actors don't share. Do you think that's fair? I mean, maybe you do. You feel like you can't say that because that would be immodest.
Like,
yeah.
But thank you very much.
Well, an unpretentiousness then.
But I know. I mean, all my actor mates are like that. I think you, Jodie, Andy, everybody.
Yeah.
If there is an arsehole, I suppose they're more interesting, aren't they? So that's why people talk about them.
But actually, indulge them a bit.
Yeah.
Mm.
And
have you ever felt the need to explore your dark side so that people take you terribly seriously?
What, and it behave like an arsehole?
Well, sometimes, does it feel to you sometimes that when you're on a set and you think, oh, the people who misbehave get everything, don't they? You get treated so well.
But they also get talked about and I don't want that.
Yeah.
Mm. You can see people going, fucking hell.
Yeah.
And I'd hate it if someone did that.
Me too. I couldn't
bear
it.
No.
And if I do get cross on set, you're the same as me, if we do get a little bit irritated about something, then my day's ruined. if I have a slightly short word with anyone, I can't recover.
God, yes. There have been moments like that, haven't there? I can picture you just embarrassed and...
Oh, yeah. No,
full day.
Well, it just goes against everything I feel. Yeah. Well, there's too many of us, aren't there? But what does make you grumpy?
Subservience makes me really grumpy.
Oh, yes.
You know when someone is, people are trained to be a bit kowtowy to actors.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And that fucks me off.
When you get treated sort of...
Oh, and you go, please don't, I just find it humiliating, don't do it. And they just keep doing it.
And people call you Ms. Coleman.
Yeah, I don't know if they do that very often. But the sort of opening doors for you and walking with you everywhere, and that's, I'm sounding like an arsehole.
No, you're not, because it's a testament to your unpretentious. The trouble is, of course, you now have quite a lot. You now have more status than you probably feel entirely comfortable with, I would suggest, on a set.
But you know that.
On a film set. I do know exactly what you mean.
So if a spark needs a pee,
Yeah.
The world doesn't have to know, and he doesn't need anyone to hold his hand.
People don't have to, on the radio, go.
Go, yeah, it's gone turn one.
Gone turn one.
Gone turn two. and I go, please don't let everyone know that I'm going for a piss. And
the trouble is, the world does slightly grind to a halt if you leave the set, doesn't it?
But I always check. I always check with the first.
Yeah.
How long is this turnaround? Have I got
time?
You're a
nice person. You're a proper nice person.
Also, just trying to avoid the need for the entire set to hear on their earphones.
Talking about your water.
Livia's gone for a piss. I find that difficult.
Quite useful to let the sound department know to turn your microphone off, though, surely.
No, it's quite funny when. Sorry.
And what about?
That was an Alfred noise.
There he was. He made a little grumble.
See, he is here.
Yeah. And what about offset? What makes you grumpy?
Oh, loads.
Does it?
Yes. Oh, now I've got to think of something now.
Yeah.
People who drive in the middle lane of a three-lane motorway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's.
Oh, yeah.
You know. It's effectively turning a three-lane road into a two-lane road, isn't
well,
it?
Well, yeah. This is your driving background coming out.
Yeah.
Did people know you were a rally driver? Is that something you talk about?
I talk about it whenever I'm having to drive on set.
Yes, you do. I know.
And I get a lot of people helping me to reverse.
All right, love, let me show you how this car works.
Left hand down, left hand down. I'll be all right, thanks.
Yeah. But it's quite... I don't think people would necessarily expect that of you.
No. Well, I wasn't... I mean, to say I was a rally driver...
You've definitely told me you were a rally driver.
I had my rally licence.
Oh, OK. Is that not the same thing?
Not quite the same thing.
Oh.
I didn't spend my days, you know, winning races. But I'm quite handy around a track,
right.
Course.
You drove in some races?
No.
Oh, this is slightly puncturing the dream I had.
In that case, then, yes, I did.
Okay, that's fine. Just say that. It doesn't matter.
My dad and my brother were rally drivers, amateur rally drivers.
Right.
And I used to, drive with them and went round Snetterton.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are the sort of things that keep you up at night, then? I'm trying to find the dark side because evident.
Okay.
Which is lovely. One of the lovely things about you.
Dark side. I'm not on social media because I don't think I'm very thick-skinned.
That's a good thing though, right?
It's a good thing. I think people forget they can put something into their phone about someone they've never met and it sends and they have no repercussions, no reason to think that they've hurt anyone. And on occasion I've read something and I shouldn't done. And I'll stay awake. I'll cry and go into a depression.
Right.
Because
some arsehole's written something mean.
Yeah. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, probably not that mean, but I'm not able to cope with it.
Well, I think that's understandable. I think you're right. I think people don't really appreciate the kind of impact of putting something in writing.
Yeah.
Because something on the internet, it assumes, because it's in black and white, as it were. It's in typeface. Yeah. It suddenly feels more important than someone. It's effectively just someone standing on a street corner shouting rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah.
But because it's written down,
yeah,
it feels more important.
And I don't know what they think. They think that you have no feeling, no nerve endings. You're not a real person. I don't know what they think. But and I'm fortunate that it doesn't happen very often. But for someone, oh, God, I don't know how people cope. I don't know why anyone would want to put themselves out there like that.
So are you nervous about social media because... You want to avoid that side of it, or just because you wouldn't know sort of how to do it or how to...
I just find it distasteful.
Right.
I just don't know why I'd have to show everyone what happens every day.
Yeah.
Or what
your
I'm
breakfast.
Eating or my breakfast or me with a filter. Also, I'm getting dead arm from the dog. Hang on a minute. Can you get down, please?
Go on. Down
good boy. You're a good boy. There's a sort of level of vanity now which is sort of accepted and it used to be mocked, I mean, if anyone caught you looking in a mirror, I'd have been embarrassed as a teen.
Yeah.
And now you see youngsters all the time sort of on a bus or anywhere holding a phone up. I just think, makes me giggle.
Or in their pants a lot of the time as well, I see. Apparently, I'm told.
Awkward. What, just filming them, looking at themselves or putting themselves on the internet in their pants?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is quite weird. Do you think, though, that's... I think, again, that slightly speaks to your lack of pretentiousness, perhaps a lack of vanity that you have. Do you think
my old age.
No, that obviously comes... do you think that's from your upbringing? Tell me about life in the Coleman household.
In the
70s.
It was all right.
Late 70s.
Late 70s.
Later than me.
Yeah. When were you born?
71.
Oh, that's really old.
I know.
It's not. I'm 74.
Mm.
Born 74.
January the 30th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at you.
See, I've got notes in front
of
me.
Oh, my God. Do you know, once on whatever it is, Wikipedia, they had my birthday as the wrong day, the wrong month, and sort of 8 years before I was born.
Oh, my God. How appalling.
So I emailed them pretending it wasn't me. I was at school with her, and actually that's not her birthday.
Because you couldn't get...
I didn't want to think. I didn't want to think they were being so vain.
What name did you make up?
Oh, I can't remember. I can't remember. This was years ago.
Did you use the name of someone you were actually at school with?
No, I just think I gave my nickname Collie. So
right.
I was thinking they wouldn't know.
Right.
And
now they know.
And then didn't get a reply. And then I wrote again, going, oh, sorry, guys, but this is, it's, I know it's wrong. And they didn't reply. And then I said, OK, it's me. And this is really upsetting that you've made me 8 years older than I actually am.
That is awful.
And they said, we'd have to see a birth certificate to prove. And I went, whose fucking birth certificate did you look at in the first place to make me 8 years older? And so then they changed it. And then I thought, fuck, I should have lied.
So you had to swear, you had to get angry and swear at them for them to take attention.
I should have lied and said I was younger. I've missed that.
Yes, Catherine Tate used to say she was a year older, and that's because I can't remember why now.
So then people always think, oh, she looks.
And
good
maybe that's why. Yeah, but that's now.
I just sort of stuck with 8 years older. Then
that's in people think IMDb she's... and so on. They think she's a year older than she is. Yeah. So where did acting start and all that?
At 16, I did my first school play,
which was The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie.
Yes, DT.
How was your
Get
accent?
You. It was really good. It was amazing. Thank you very much.
This was a skill. It's great. Lovely. No, you're very good at the old voices.
You're very nice.
That was a school production of The Prime Minister in Brodie, and you got the lead part straight off the bat. You'd never done any acting before that.
No, but we all had to audition.
Right.
And
what made you think I fancy a go at that?
I don't know.
You'd never done anything like that? You didn't do drama clubs or...
No. I don't know. I think I was really shit at everything else at school.
Right.
And I think you might know in the back of your head, I'd quite like to have a go at that. Even, I think I'd probably harboured a secret dream that I'd love to do what they do on the telly or when I've been to the theatre.
Mm.
But are you allowed to without coming from that place?
Did you go to the theatre, though? Did you?
My mum used to be a ballet dancer when she was a young'un.
Did she?
And she'd take us to the ballet every year.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's very humbling to watch what dancers can do with their bodies.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd be able to do that. But I was very impressed that Mum once upon a time could do that.
Yeah.
And then I think going to see maybe a panto was my first view of actors on stage. Brilliant. What fun.
But you didn't have precedence around you of people who'd followed that kind of a life.
No,
well, was your mum being a ballet dancer? There was a bit of that.
Yeah. And her dad had said, I think she got a place at the Rombert.
Wow.
And her dad said she couldn't go because... it was frivolous or silly, or she needed to be a nurse or a secretary or something sensible.
Did she feel bitter about that?
I think always, yeah. And I think I knew that.
Mm.
And so I used that a little bit when I said I wanted to be an actor.
How did they react?
Well, they were nervous, you know.
Sure.
And I said, but you know, she said, yes, but I knew, but I'd be the corps de ballet. I would never be prima ballerina, and it's very hard. It's a hard life. But, yeah, well... I want to do that, so...
And what age were you when you said that? Was it straight after Miss Jean Brodie?
I can't remember.
Was that experience, though, very formative? Did you kind of go, oh, I love
a bit of this? That was... I remember the first time I felt that sort of... Well, I felt like I could do it.
Uh-huh.
I'd never really been able to do anything before that. Or felt like I was better at it than other people.
Well, because at school you weren't particularly academic or...
No, I found it very hard to concentrate.
Really?
I was definitely the one sort of gazing out the window or singing a song in my head. Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Call it. Sorry. Yep. Sorry. and then suddenly I could really concentrate on this. And I would, you know, do my homework without being asked. I'd learn my lines without anyone checking.
Right.
It was a revelation. It was a lovely feeling to feel like I wanted to do something.
Yeah.
Did you have that?
I suppose I did, but I grew up with this notion of it, and I still, to this day, haven't quite figured that out. From when I was tiny.
You'd always wanted to do it. Yeah,
and again, I didn't know anyone who'd ever done it. I just did. It's the same thing as you, that thing of going, oh, the people on the telly. I like that. That looks fun. And going to pantomimes, and it was probably quite similar. There weren't people around me who'd been actors, but I just kind of, I latched onto it very, very young. Yeah. And then the idea did sort of grow up with me.
Yeah. And did you wonder, because your folks didn't do.
No.
No.
Although my dad talked a bit about, he went into the ministry, which has a bit of theatre to it.
Having to be in front of people, all eyes on you. And,
And he did talk about, at a younger age, harbouring a bit of a impossible dream about going into acting, which never went anywhere because there just wasn't an opportunity to do that in Glasgow and Bishop Briggs. So I suppose it was quite similar. But you didn't go straight to drama school?
No.
And why was that then?
I think that was a mixture of... I still wasn't brave enough, I think, to say I actually want to throw my life into it.
Right. Were you slightly persuaded to... It was teaching you started studying, right?
Yeah, hilariously. Can you imagine? I'd be the worst teacher.
What subject was it?
Drama.
Okay.
It was for little kids, so it would have been a bit of everything.
Okay, right. Primary teaching.
Yeah, primary.
And where was that?
At Homerton.
Right.
Teacher training in Cambridge.
In Cambridge rather than Cambridge University.
Yes, in the town of Cambridge.
Yes. but that's where you met some of the people you would later go on to work with. Is that right?
Yeah. So you get given a Cambridge University Student Union card.
Okay.
Even though you don't, so you sort of can flash that around and get into where all the clever people are. And I was at the Union Society doing something and there was a sign saying auditions that way. I went, ooh, and I went along to that, still thinking like I can act, you know, here and no one has to know and lovely. And it was a Footlights audition and I didn't know what Footlights was.
Right.
And there were some slightly sort of unamused type faces, you know, behind a desk.
Pretentious students.
Yeah. Who I know quite well now. and I had to sell something to them. That wasn't food, but make it look like food. Oh, fuck.
What, you mean do a sort of improvised audition? Right.
Yeah. I mean, hell on earth.
Had you ever done anything like that before?
No.
Did you even know what they meant when they said that?
No. I just sort of, I knew improvised meant I've got to make this up.
Right.
Right, okay. So there were massive sort of buckets of fag ends around the place. And I picked out a grubby fag end.
Bold.
I was trying to.
They admired your bravery straight away.
Well, I was trying to sell this, and there's nothing, and eventually went, it's delicious and good for you, and I ate it.
You never.
I did, and they did that face that you're doing, and I think the only reason I got in was they thought, well, clearly she's game, and that's revolting.
Wow.
I mean, it was fucking rank.
I bet it was, yeah.
Yeah.
But and you started working in comedy pretty much, full time, right?
Yeah.
And how did you feel about that? Was that?
Fine, it's work.
Fine, exactly.
And I was thrilled.
Yeah.
I mean, what's not to love?
Yeah.
I'm working with people I liked and I always dreamt of being able to do all sorts of things.
Yes.
But you'll take the work.
Well, of course.
You know.
And did that sort of define who you thought you were becoming? Did you start aspiring to be Victoria Wood or were you always aspiring to be Judi Dench?
I think Judy was always my...
Yeah, yeah.
the love of my life.
Yes.
You know, she does funny as well.
Of course.
And there's reams of, and you're hilarious. There's, you know, so many people do both.
Sure.
Do comedy.
Yeah.
The other one. Mm. And I don't know why people still think that you can only be on the comedy list and not the other list as well.
And yet they often do, of course.
Yeah. They all change and swap and change. And
did that, after a while, did that start to frustrate you? Did you think, I want to be, or were you just happy working?
I think it did frustrate a bit, probably. I sort of wanted something meaty.
Yeah.
And dramatic.
Yeah.
And it was hard to get seen because you're seen as, you know, the comedy one. Paddy Considine was the one, I think, who took a punt, the biggest punt.
And this was Tyrannosaur?
Yes.
So, and how did he come to think, oh, I'll get the girl from Peep Show?
I have no idea. No, well, we met on the Hot Fuzz.
Oh, right, of course, yes.
And this is a story that I've told lots of times before, so forgive me.
Oh, no.
But I was excited to meet Paddy. I was a big fan. And on his first date, we had rehearsals together. And he was a bit delayed because he'd had to come from either America or the north of England or something. He'd come from not London, a bit further away. So we were sort of waiting for a bit. And then he came upstairs and I was so excited to meet him. Big grin, hi. And I opened the door for him. No, after you. And he says that when I opened the door for him, he thought, oh, she'd be right for that, for my short film.
Oh, wow. Right.
So there's a moral of the story.
Yeah, always open the door for Paddy Considine.
And at the time, I was doing a series of Peep Show, and I'd already said to Paddy, oh, my God, yes, please, I'd love to do the short. I'd seen the script, and it was in Glasgow, and it was quite bad weather. And then one of the producers on Peep Show said, we're not going to let you go up to Glasgow because of the weather. We can't guarantee you'll get back.
Oh.
And I, there's no fucking way. You can't commit to something and it's a low budget. What are they going to do if you don't turn up?
Yeah.
And so I ignored him, paid for my own flight, went to Glasgow.
That was bold.
Well,
I mean,
Paddy. Yeah. With an amazing script. And Peep Show were able to sort of maybe rejig if I didn't turn up on Monday.
Right.
But they couldn't.
Right, yeah,
also,
sure.
Just rude. You can't.
No, quite. Yeah. Well, if they'd said you could go.
Yeah. And I wouldn't not turn up to Peep Show.
No.
I think, you know, and most people are, they're very accommodating for each other because they all know the feeling.
Mm, mm.
But I think being told no was the thing that made me go, fucking go.
Because Peep Show up until that point had been the thing that you were probably most known for. I mean, as you came in the building this morning, somebody shouted, Sophie!
And I'm like,
I'm the fucking queen!
Yes.
So that, does that... That did that feel like a sort of thing that was that were you getting recognised in the street and things for the first time on doing Peep Show?
Yes, and I did an advert around that time.
Of course you did. For insurance, car insurance.
Yeah, AA, I think.
Right.
And that had become the bane of my life.
Hello, Kev. Hello. What is it?
Yes, thank
Kevin?
You for reminding everybody. That's yeah. That's it. And so people were shouting.
Bev and Kev, that was
that's
it, wasn't
that's it?
It? Yes.
I thought they were going to run that for about a week, but they ran it, felt like, four times a day for a year.
Yes, and like that must have bought you a house, didn't it?
No, because they it was a buyout.
Oh.
Well, they say,
you deserve to be bought a house for that.
Yes. And they they said it, we're going to run it for a short amount of time and here's your fee. In the old days, remember, you got on repeats, didn't you?
Yeah.
But I didn't get that. Get that deal. So they ran it for a year, having just given me a buyout, which is really annoying. Yeah. And also, I think I lost some jobs because...
really? Because you were so recognisable from that commercial?
Yeah.
So you had that and you had Peep Show running. And that's, I suppose that was what you were in the public consciousness. So then Paddy puts you in this movie, which couldn't have been more different. Was Tyrannosaur and that sort of move into... For want of a better word, more dramatic acting. Is that where Broadchurch came from? Is that where they saw you for
I
that?
I don't know. Maybe. I can't remember.
How did it come about? Where did they just call you up or did you get a script first? Or
yeah. So it was Jane and Chris.
Jane Featherstone.
Jane Featherstone and Chris. I love calling him Chinball. Because apparently that was Miss on, you know, when you go to a dinner and his name was written Chinball instead of Chibnall. And that, I just, I bet he wishes he'd never told me that. But so Chris Chinball and Jane Featherstone sent me the script. And remember that, reading that first episode, just going, that was that visceral.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I want that.
Yeah.
I want to say those words.
Yeah.
But on the day and not before.
Yeah.
That sort of feeling. I went to meet them. I think they said, I said, oh my God, yes, please. And they went, they weren't expecting.
Right.
I think actors are meant to play it a bit cooler. Oh, then I asked, I asked who did it.
Yeah.
And they told me.
Yeah.
And I was very upset. And they went, yes, that's exactly what we want. And then about 20 minutes later, I hadn't even got home. And they went, actually, could you... pretend we haven't told you. We don't actually want to do it that way.
Yes, and you did pretend, didn't you?
I did. You were really... Now, that was a cross. That was a very angry DT.
It wasn't that I was cross. I couldn't believe you'd been so duplicitous. The rest of us, of course, because I came on board for Broadchurch. You were already there. That's all I don't know how much later it was, but I'd known Chris and James Strong for years because we'd worked on Doctor Who together. And that was when I got sent this script. That was, nobody's being told anything. You'll get it script by script, which playing a detective was really useful because it meant You know, yeah. We've often said when you're doing those interrogation scenes, who do you believe?
And luckily for me, I forget everything. So.
But you were very good. You played along. And it was, again, it was your, it was something, some conversation between agents.
It was my agent and your agent who had a chat. And,
and my agent said, isn't it amazing that none of them know what's coming in the script? Went, yeah, but, well, obviously Olivia does, but what? Sorry, what?
Oh, God, I'll never forget sitting in the van and the door, you move fast anyway. You flew in. I can't fucking believe it.
Your face was the child who'd been caught drawing on the wall with crayons. You didn't know what to say.
I really didn't.
Because you'd gone lied. Deep. You'd lied blatantly for weeks. You'd been joining in everyone, all the speculation on set.
I'd been betting on who it might be.
Who were you saying?
I said it might be me. and Joe Sims.
Yeah.
I thought Plummer's mate.
Yeah.
And you?
Had you managed to convince yourself that you didn't know, do you think?
I wondered if maybe they had done it as all a big part of a glamorous sort of...
A subterfuge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Broadchurch then sort of took off in a way that I don't think any of us really expect.
No.
Did that take you a bit by surprise? The fact that suddenly you were public property, maybe in a way that
because you knew that feeling.
I guess so. Yeah.
From I went into a bit of a decline.
Right. Yeah.
And I was very defensive on your behalf too.
Well, there was that wonderful day on the pier at West Bay where I was having some microphone wire put down my trouser leg. It was very undignified.
Yes, I think she was videoing you.
I think she was,
from a table's distance away.
Yeah, I was very touched, but you were furious and you leapt at this woman.
Yeah, I did.
Although she sort of still didn't notice, did she? She sort of grinned and kept filming.
Yeah.
But that was probably before that was sort of thing was necessarily happening to you. But then once the show came out, that became your life.
So filming second and third series was just... Yeah. Awful. And I was begging not to do any outdoor scenes.
Yeah.
Because of people, you know, just hordes of people with their camera phones out.
Did you, that loss of anonymity that you suddenly had, was that?
To me, the worst thing about a job that we love.
Mm. How do you reconcile that? What's your...
Don't go out.
Right.
I've become very much a hermit. I have friends that I adore.
Yeah.
And I like going... to safe places with them, my home or their home or something. But I
have you got better at compartmentalizing the bits of your life that you give away and the bits that you because nobody nobody teaches you how that works, do they?
No,
there's no class at that drama school about
and it's
how to comport yourself.
Very stupidly, nothing I expected to happen. I just wanted to work.
Mm. Yes,
and also I know that people might go, "Oh, I love that job, you did. Thank you very much." And you think that's going to last a week and then go.
Mm.
But now, and also the world has changed. You know, everyone's got a fucking camera.
Yeah.
And people are desensitized to fellow humans.
Yeah. It takes getting used to that. But I think I remember at first you feeling very sort of... I remember that feeling too. When you first lose that anonymity, it's quite threatening. It's much more threatening than you imagine it's going to be objectively, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Because you imagine that sort of, for want of the better word, celebrity... It somehow empowers you, but actually I think
it's horrible.
It's the opposite of that.
It's bullying every moment of every day that you're out.
Right.
It's people nudging and pointing in your direction and talking about you.
I mean, but I don't think mostly that's not meant vindictively.
No, but people, it's rude to stare.
Yeah.
I remember that phrase. But they I don't know if they think that you can't feel that it's happening, but it does... You have to be a very brave soul to be able to cope with nudging.
Mm.
And most people that come up are really nice.
Yeah.
99.9%.
Yeah.
But I can't cope with it.
Yeah. Do you feel you've got better at it, though? Because you've been public property for a good 5 years.
Yeah. I'm marginally better because I don't go out.
Right.
And I heard I'm going to do a massive name drop.
Sure, do it.
Michelle Pfeiffer advised me.
Oh, dear.
That's a good one, isn't it?
What's that on the floor?
She said... Feel like a shark. Don't stop moving.
Yes, right.
And
do you have disguises at all?
I wear a hat and I try to move fast.
Yeah.
So I don't want for the kids. I try to avoid going sort of to things with them, which is horrible. We've got a little escape house now in the countryside.
Right.
Yeah. But
we'll put the address of that on.
Thanks. So that's quite nice because there's far fewer people there, and you can go out and play with the kids outside without people seeing you.
Yeah.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
But do you regret that?
No, you see, that's
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, because hand in hand with that, I'm getting work that I'm loving and I've always dreamt of. So as long as I know I can keep my head down, stay at home, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
But it does, things have changed. I can't enjoy a night at the pub without feeling really self-conscious. And I used to love that. But then I've got kids now anyway, so you don't really get to.
Sure. Daniel Craig was just, did you hear what he had to say about that? He said, I've learned to drink 18 pints in 30 minutes. Because that's how long his window is at the pub.
Yeah, before everyone starts to turn around.
I mean, I guess if you're James Bond, it's probably probably even kind of physically dangerous to be in pubs for too long. But
that's very funny.
And Broadchurch then must have changed what was available to you, because suddenly you were recognised and appreciated and loved.
Yeah, so again, that means that you get more work.
So then what do you decide? How do you, when you then move from being an actor who just wants a job to one who maybe gets to choose between two or three jobs, what's your criteria? How do you?
I don't know. I'm still in that panicky mode where I'm never going to work again. Yeah. So I say yes too much.
Right. Do you think you say yes too much?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh, this is nice. This is chatting to my chum. All the while in the back of my head, I'm thinking, if I said anything that I shouldn't say, I'm going to piss anyone off.
You've been delightful as ever.
When
the night manager came up, did you know that was the thing to do next? Or you just go, oh, that fits in? Or...
I loved that script again. And also, I loved that Angela Burr had been a male character in the book.
Right.
And I particularly loved the early scenes where they just changed the name, but it was still, you know, it had been written as a man talking.
Right.
Well, I loved, why do you have to talk differently as a woman? And I loved it that they went, fuck it, be pregnant.
Yeah, lucky.
That's handy. That was a bit of a deal breaker.
Right,
I just really, again, it was a sort of visceral, like, script thing.
And is that Les Mis you've done, Les Miserables you've done since then?
Oh, yes.
And
With a deal,
Murder on the Orient Express.
Murder on the Orient Express I did purely because I got to sit next to Judi Dench.
Right.
I don't think I read it before I went, yes, please.
And Judi Dench, would you say she was and is forever your acting hero?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So were you nervous that she might be some old, wizened old bitch?
I think I've heard all your dreams. Many...
I mean, nobody has ever said anything nasty about her.
Ever. I'm going to have to get rid of Alfred again. Sorry. Just get pins and needles. Good boy.
But if that's the reason you take a job, because your hero is on it, there must be a...
Yeah, that's silly, isn't it?
Well, no, not because she's delightful and she's everything
she's so
you could hope she would be.
She really is. Oh, he's not having a wee, he's drinking. Because I thought, what if our paths never cross and I never get to, you know, sit opposite Judi Dench? I've got to do it. It's always been my dream.
I bet you got on like a house on fire.
Oh, God, I loved her so much.
Yeah.
She's hilarious.
Yeah.
And she's naughty.
Yeah.
She's proper naughty.
Is she naughtier than you?
Yeah, I think so.
Is she?
Yeah. No. I never have to be well behaved because Judi Dench isn't well behaved. I'm not. Badly.
You're not badly behaved at all, but you're a little bit naughty in a very fun way.
It's fun. It's got to be fun though, hasn't it?
Yeah. So I just saw The Favourite the other day, which is your...
Did you?
Yes.
When did you see that?
Oh, a couple of days ago.
How?
Oh, one of those, you know, posh BAFTA screening things. Yeah. You're terribly good in that.
Oh, thanks.
You're suddenly playing Queens.
Yeah, it's in my rider now.
Queen, I want to call her Queen Mary, Queen Anne.
Queen Anne.
Not one of the most famous people from history, but what a story.
For furniture and buildings.
Yeah, sure. What an amazing story.
Oh my God, isn't it amazing? Why don't we know about her?
Well, we do now.
Because I would have listened to those history lessons.
Yeah.
I know. 17 children.
None of them survived.
None of them survived.
Awful.
Yeah.
Quite an unhappy lady, eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was with Rachel Weisz as the Duchess of Marlborough, and Emma Stone as the Baroness Masham, both competing for your affection.
Yeah, I know. How cool is that? Only in the land of film could I pull Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone.
Well, you do it very, very elegantly.
Thanks for and you'd worked with the power.
You'd worked with this director before.
Yes, Yorgos Lanthimos.
I'm so glad you said his name.
It's as it's written.
Oh, okay,
Lanthimos.
Yorgos. Where's he from?
Greece,
that makes sense.
Wanted to say Croydon just for a laugh. Greece. And he is amazing. You'd love him.
It's an extraordinary film because it's very much about, the three of you are brilliant in it. It's very much about this trio of women and this relationship between the three of them.
This
love triangle, really, between the three of them. And yet, the film itself is quite sort of, it's got a sort of Tim Burton gothic going on, and it's very kind of production design, very extreme. There's a crazy dance at one point that comes out of the sort of historical. But when you're playing it, were you aware of all that stuff, or are you just playing this?
Because I'm a Yorgos fan, and I've seen his other films, and I worked with him on Lobster, and I sort of knew that you can't expect. Just get rid of any expectations because he'll do something different.
Right.
So that was fun and joyful. Go, a dance scene. Okay.
Right.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, there's voguing.
Yeah.
But you sort of, again, it's a position of trust.
Right.
I think that's the, we trusted James Strong. Then you can just let go.
Yeah.
So all this stuff is happening, which will be amazing because I'm convinced it will be because he's brilliant. And then you just play for all the honesty you can, I suppose. And hope that he'll go, no, bigger, smaller, you know, whatever.
And in terms of the relationship between you and the other two actors, was that, I'm presuming you all got on.
Yeah, my God, love them.
Yeah.
Now, that's a friendship for life type job.
Which one is your favourite?
I love them both equally.
Okay, like, very good.
Which is your favourite child?
Can you imagine? Well, it depends what day you ask. I tend to have a favourite each day.
That's true.
How important are those sort of personal relationships on set?
I think...
And I won't ask you to name names, but have you... You must have had a relationship where you're having to act opposite someone that you're not entirely keyed into as a human being. And how much more difficult does that make it for you personally?
So much harder.
Some people, I think, seem to thrive on that, but I don't think I'm actually
a very good actor. I can't pretend it.
Right.
So, if I think someone's a dick, I think you can tell that I think that.
Right. Right.
And on the favourite, we had 2 or 3 weeks rehearsal beforehand, which, as we know, doesn't happen very often.
And also, you've said you don't like.
But this was different.
Right.
Because it wasn't sort of intellectually ploughing through, pulling apart and ruining every fucking word. It was playing games.
Right.
We dicked around for 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
And I had to learn how to sit on a horse as well, which I'd never done before.
Oh, right. We did that very well.
So we played and we giggled and it was so much fun.
That's interesting. Because it does come across, you get the sense of real intimacy between you all.
Good.
Which is great, yeah.
Because I find, yes, intimate scenes I can't do. I'd rather not do. Embarrassing.
Right, yes. And yes, there's a bit of quite intimate stuff going on there, yeah.
Get fingered. That was a funny episode. Because obviously Emily and I have...
Emma Stone, each other called very Emily. Well.
Yes, sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Whenever we've had to do Q&As and things, she calls me Collie and I call her Emily. It just looks like we don't know each other at all. So the fingering thing, we got the giggles because I was saying, she said, oh my God, what happens if I just have to go up the skirt? And I went, it's okay. Because obviously you don't want to actually find pants and go, I'm so sorry. So I asked makeup, do you have anything I can put there so that she knows she's got there? Okay, then she can pretend to finger. And so I found a damp sponge, which was the worst.
Did you tell her it was going to be damp?
So, and so she put her arm up, and you could see her going, the panic on her face that she'd found a damp sponge.
Oh, was very good.
So much fun.
That could have been, yes, that wouldn't have been fun if you hadn't got on with that actor.
No, exactly.
That could have been ghastly.
Yeah. I'd put something spiky there.
Yeah. Yeah. And now another queen.
And now another queen.
Queen Elizabeth II. You're in the midst of filming the third series, first series of The Crown for Netflix, replacing Claire Foy as Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah.
Have you ever played someone so known? You know, she's so sort of iconic. I mean, it didn't occur to me until I see you in all the gear. Yeah. You're going to go, oh, my God,
well, there's only one woman with that hairdo.
Quite, so, yes. Yeah. And she's on our stamps.
Yeah, we've all seen that a lot.
A lot.
Yeah. That is, yeah, you kind of can't think about that.
No, of course. Well, presumably, that's what I wonder about. How does it make you react to the kind of the fact of monarchy, having played two queens, and particularly this one? This woman who is still a human being who gets up in the morning and goes to the loo, presumably, although I don't want to say anything that might get me in the tower. And yet she's so much more than just a human being.
Yeah. I have to say, from doing this, I was a big fan of The Crown, actually, which I didn't want to watch it because it was sort of too advertised for me. They're making me do it. I don't want to do it.
Right.
And then just absolutely obsessed with it.
Mm.
I think the Queen... Not sure I was ever a monarchist. I wasn't.
Right.
But the Queen is an incredibly impressive human being.
Right.
And I'm slightly obsessed with her.
Right.
I have to say.
And has that grown the more you...
It's grown.
Right.
It's become almost unbearable now.
So do you feel terribly responsible to the kind of...
Well, my duties, you know, are to try and... I don't want anyone who knows her to watch and go, she is totally off the mark.
You're right.
But other people's duties are... You know, the historical research, the words, the things. I feel like that's...
And that's all done for you?
That's done.
You don't have to spend hours in the British Library researching.
The research team are incredible.
Right.
And if you're doing a like-for-like type scene thing, they'll send you all the videos they've got of...
Oh, right.
Great. So they just send it to you and you watch it and go, okay.
And so are you are sort of matching moments in history?
Some. So there's the Welsh investiture of Prince Charles. There's obviously things that people can access on video.
Yeah.
That we try and do respectfully at the same sort of shape of clothes and things like that. Trying to think, Churchill's funeral.
Right.
Things that people will have seen.
Yeah.
You try and sort of...
Or will presumably then go to YouTube and look up, because that's the world we live in now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Do you get lots of guidance on accent and decorum and protocol?
Yes, the voice department are amazing and they're there all the time.
Right.
So even a little sort of, you say the odd television, and it's a way of saying it, which is partly historical and partly, she sort of has her own accent.
Right. And that has changed through the years as well, hasn't it?
I think the pitch has changed a bit through the years. And as all of us, if you heard a video of you,
age
9...
Yeah. It sounded exactly like that. Yeah.
But television, so it's an sound, television.
Right.
Which I enjoy all of those. That's quite fun.
Yeah.
Going through all the sound.
And a lot of dressing up, presumably.
Lots of dressing up.
Is this, do they do it to your hair or do you wear a wig every day?
Oh, no. So I've gone very short because
you're wearing a wig.
And reduce time. Getting up early in the morning.
Yeah, sure.
Because long hair takes ages to wind.
Yes.
So I've gone very short for 2 years of wigs.
Right.
And they're amazing. I mean, they're unbelievable. The makeup department and the wardrobe department, they make every costume.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
Some of the costumes are on screen for seconds.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. But then they have a big tour of them, I think. And
right. Yeah.
But is it? It's.
She is. Whatever you think of the monarchy, and people have different opinions, but she generally is adored, isn't she?
Oh my God! But she is
slightly irrationally, almost in some people. Some people who would, by rights, you would think wouldn't have a particular. Even people who describe themselves as Republicans, there's something about her that is.
But that's
maybe it's just conditioned into
it.
It
sort of goes against, I suppose, my general set of beliefs.
Mm.
But then. They're humans, and I don't hate any humans, and they didn't put themselves in that position. And, you know, there's massive debates we could have about this.
Sure, but, there definitely are.
But she, in particular, as an individual, made a vow as a very young woman to serve her country, which is an extraordinary thing to do. And she genuinely has stuck to it.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
She's an even keel. I think it's going to be a terrible, terrible shock when she's not our even keel anymore.
Yes.
Suddenly, I don't think we realise quite how secure it is knowing that there's that person there.
Yes,
that's what I mean?
Interesting. So you know what, this is you for the next year and a bit, being the Queen.
Yeah.
And then that will continue. I mean, you've won a lot of prizes over the last few years. And with The Favourite and this, that would seem to... There's every chance that run will continue. But is that... No, I'm saying that. You don't have to respond to that. I wouldn't ask you to. But does that... Do you sort of look at the row of BAFTAs on the shelf and go, oh, do you know what? I'm probably quite good. Do you allow yourself that moment of self-belief? Or does your...
I don't know.
Does
I
your
think...
humble upbringing... bring you, not allow you to, does it
I
feel
think,
like hubris?
I think I've been very lucky, and I think in the roles I've been lucky enough to play, lots of people could have done it well. You know, that sort of...
Yeah, but you did it
I
best.
I think... oh, it does
I know,
go,
this is making you really awkward, I know, but I just sort of...
There are moments when I feel like I did it well.
Right.
And there are definitely a lot of times when I think I'm going to be found out.
Right.
But I think a lot of the time... I think you've got to be a nice person to work with. That's part of the battle.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I was trying to cast something and I knew they were difficult and I knew they're not, I'd employ them.
Yeah.
And so I think quite a chunk of it is not being difficult to work with, I think.
Well, there's too many of us, aren't there?
It's too many of us. So you don't want to be the arsehole because then you won't get the job.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I try to think along those lines.
Do you find, do you feel a sort of tussle within yourself between the kind of, because also, you know, as your work becomes more international, as an actor, I don't mean specifically you, that's happening to you, undoubtedly. There's a sort of different flavour to the way you're expected to be, aren't you? You're expected to sort of...
Yeah. So now I'm sort of having to have PR people.
Which, publicists. Yes, sure.
They're very nice, but I find it very difficult because I like turning up on my own.
Yeah.
For example,
and they're handling the part of the the business that you, I would, without putting words in your mouth, aren't particularly comfortable with or less comfortable with than the actual turning up and doing the acting.
Yes, I find the press side of things. Again, I'm going to do another name drop.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. How heavy
it's
is this
Michelle
one
again. Really
oh,
sorry.
It's just the
so
same,
it's the same
name
one.
Drop. Right,
so
okay.
Not,
she's still on the floor. We'll trip over that name on the way out.
But she said she does the
Where
film.
Where were you hanging out with Michelle Pfeiffer?
Oh, my God. On Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, sorry, of course.
And
of
we
course,
did another film together years ago that
did
I don't
you?
Think I probably made the final cut.
Oh.
But she says she does the film for free. It's the press they pay her for. Which
very
I
good.
Think
oh,
is.
She's full of wise advice.
Isn't she?
Yes.
I mean, that's gold.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense. So,
but that increases exponentially with the...
Yeah.
With the...
See, you know when you have to do the red carpety bit?
Yeah.
I am so happy to say hello to all the normals, all the people.
Yes.
I'd rather do that. I'd try and see everybody, sign everything, because I'm at work and they go, may I take a picture? Everyone's polite. It's lovely. Mm. The thing I find very difficult is the photographers because there's 40 or so and you get... And the flashy lights, it's intimidating, I think quite scary. And they're all shouting at you at the same time. Well, I'm trying to, I can't literally look at everybody at the same time.
Yeah, and you just feel rude.
Feel rude.
Yeah.
And the PR people often don't realise that you'd rather do. So they try and skirt you past. But I think that's rude. These people have been waiting here. That's awful.
Yes.
I'd rather do that. So there's this sort of conflict of, look, before we, can we not swoosh past all the people? Because that's rude.
Mm.
But let's swoosh past everyone. That's because that's terrifying.
But there is a pressure, isn't there, that comes with all that? Because, and again, I'm not putting, you don't have to say this, but with The Favourite, people are starting to talk about Academy Awards. I mean, it's like on a different level. Then that comes with a sort of, there's a sort of campaigning element to that, which I imagine you don't feel wildly comfortable about.
No.
But at the same time, you must be thinking, well, I don't know, what are you thinking? Do you think, I'll do what I'm told?
It's amazing. It's an eye-opener.
Mm.
And I've got advice from various different people, which, and all the advice is so different. Some advice is, fuck it, put your head down, do whatever they tell you to do. You won't remember it at the other end.
Mm.
Or there's also, with the list of people, things you're given to do, take out three quarters of it.
Right.
And only do one or two things. Or somebody says, I do nothing. And they still, so I don't know. I don't know what you meant to
presumably
do.
You're filming till March.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
My days off. I'm starting to not tell anyone I've got a day off.
I'm amazed you turned up here today. I'm very grateful that you did.
Friends.
I know, but
nice.
Even so, it's
lovely. Well, see, at home, the kids are at school today, so.
Yes, sure.
And Alfred would have been lonely, wouldn't you, my darling? So Ian and I have come to see. You're fine. You're fine.
But do you worry that some of your normality, which I think is part of your superpower, will get eroded by it all? Does that make you nervous?
It does make me a bit nervous, I suppose. Because, you know, we've talked about actors we look at who take themselves seriously and make me giggle. I don't want to be one of them.
Yeah, no, sure.
And, I don't know. I think this is handy that it's coming now that I'm mid-40s and have worked. And
well, that's true, yeah.
Had this happened as a young'un,
I don't know if you're 17 and suddenly the world goes, oh hi. I don't know how your brain copes.
Well, no, because your teenage brain is all over the shop anyway.
Yeah. I found that bit. I was in my sort of mid to late 30s when I lost that kind of anonymity. Yeah. I found it genuinely quite distressing, much more distressing than I've ever really talked about on a. You know, something like that. Let's do that another day. But
I had to go and talk to someone about it.
I did too.
Yeah.
I did too. And I've never admitted that before, but it's true.
Well, you can take it out if you want to.
I'm so glad I
wish I'd known that.
Nearly middle-aged.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, and you're about being another bit of that. I don't know what that will be. But yeah, I think you're quite well equipped.
Well,
You've got Edwin Berdos.
Yeah, I've got.
You've got three kids.
I've got my unit.
You've got Alfred. Yeah.
I've got Alfred. And
do you find yourself clinging all the more sort of desperately to that life raft?
Yeah. And I'm possibly. my big boy went to his first big party the other day. And we got an email from the parents saying, but bags will be searched for alcohol. And he's what? He's 13.
Yeah.
Aren't they? What? And I was really slightly thrown by this. I'm not ready.
No.
And so I was meant to go to a crown party, but I could not go. I had to remain sober and in the car and ready to rescue him at a moment's notice. If he sent me a text, I don't like it. Oh, I'm there.
Get away!
and carry him out over my shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd never have spoken to me again, but I was ready. And I feel like, I can't bear for my special safe unit. I can't bear for any of them to be hurt. And that's probably nothing to do with my job. It's just, it's a mum.
No, but but I think your job can contribute to that sense of paranoia probably if you let it. So where do you see yourself and your gang in 10 years' time?
I'd love to have paid off a mortgage by then. 10 years... Oh, my God, my big boys will be really quite big.
Yeah, they'll be proper big.
Oh.
Oh, I didn't mean to upset you.
Oh, my God. Just realised they'll be in their 20s.
But they'll be happy and they'll be...
They'll be happy and hopefully
beings
still
because
living with mummy and daddy. My youngest will be a teen.
Yeah. Scary parties for the first time.
Oh. All I ever wish for is happiness. And it's very simple.
Mm.
I want everyone I love to be happy and loved. I think we've come full circle rather well, haven't we?
Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
We should
Did you engineer that? That's very good.
I don't think I did, but I'm delighted you thought I might have done.
If they feel loved, I feel like I've given them, you know, as much as I can give them. And if I keep working, I think I'm nicer. I would like to engineer it a bit so I have much more time at home.
Mm.
I mean, I do fight for those. I try and do 5-day weeks and I'm home for the weekends.
Right.
Which lots of people who have proper jobs can't do.
Mm.
I'm touch wood, it's going to just keep going happily, bubbling along and we'll be fine.
Of course it will.
Mm.
Collie, thank you very much.
Oh my God, DT, it was so nice. Are we going to go down for lunch now?
I hope so, yeah.
Okay.
David Tennant Does a Podcast With is a Something Else and No Mystery production. Produced and edited by James Deacon. Additional production from Chris Skinner, Steve Ackerman, Sarah Camlett, Josh Gibbs, Rose Zimmler Jarvis, and Georgia Tennant.
Also from Something Else.
How did we get here? With Claudia Winkleman and Professor Tanya Byron. In these in-depth one-on-one therapy sessions, we dig deep into personal stories with fascinating and emotional revelations. A passionate, insightful, and moving experience with clear outcomes to each episode.
He is as anxious about attachment with you as you are with him.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's crazy, isn't it? Oh, that's a weird feeling. Wait, so... Oh, God. Don't you just feel like, whoa, why didn't I know that all along?
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.